walk away from here. He's not used to it. Just wanted to do something a little bit different. Somebody said to me a while back that on Sunday night I went too much to the right. So I said, well, 2/3 of the congregation is to the right. Now I'm going to look to the left. And it's weird. Chapter 12 of Acts. We won't be here a long time tonight because it is a shorter chapter, 25 verses. But there's a lot to be learned here. 12 verse 1, and about that time Herod the king laid hands on some who belonged to the church in order to mistreat them. The word for mistreating is he mistreated them brutally. This was a brutal treatment. It wasn't like he called them names or something. He left them up pretty bad. And it was about that time, about 44 AD. This is like a flash forward. You know how, like, sometimes you watch a show and they'll play out one part of the story here and then they go back in time and play another part over here? This is what's occurring here. It's about 44 AD, and Caligula is now dead, and the period of peace is over for the church because, you know, no longer do they have to, the Jews have to focus on Caligula and the paganism he's forcing on Jerusalem, but now they can turn their faces toward the Christians again. And Herod the king, that's Agrippa, the first grandson of Herod the Great, he's the culprit at hand. This is about 8 years since Stephen was stoned, so that was the first great persecution that they had. Now comes the second. And he had James, the brother of John, put to death with the sword, which tells you how brutal it was. This is a civil execution. It was basically politics. When he saw that it pleased the Jews, you have an evil man who tries to please an evil people, you're going to have an evil time. So with politics running amok, he arrested Peter. And now it was during the time of unleavened bread. This is probably why there were so many Jews in Jerusalem at this time. They would come from all over, it says, when he had seized him, he put him in prison, delivering him to four squads of soldiers. You remember in Acts 5:19, the apostles already escaped out of prison. So now they're doubling down on them. Four squads of soldiers. These would have been about four soldiers per squad, 16 soldiers in shifts of 6 hours. This is the what we're going to focus on is the midnight to 6 a.m. shift, the one from midnight to morning. And they don't want them getting out this time. They already saw what happened. They said, we're going to make sure they stay in this time. Peter was scheduled to be executed, and this is very bad news for the church. And the King James Version, if you have that, says Easter instead of Passover. King James did not like terms from the accepted bishop's Bible to be changed, so that's why you have the term Easter in there. It's not in the Greek, it's not there. Because any time it ever comes up, in any version, so don't put a lot of stock in there. It's the Passover time. It's not the time for bunnies or eggs. And so Peter was kept in prison, but prayer for him was fervent, being made fervently by the church of God. This is intense and continuous prayer. That's what Christians do when there's a big event going on. There's persecution, when there's sickness in the church. I mean, think about all the people who prayed for Paul. Paul was sick this last week. And I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand. That way Paul doesn't have a vendetta against you if you didn't pray. But there was a lot of people who prayed for you, Paul. I know we had prayed for the doctors and nurses to get a good night's rest and treat you well. You don't want somebody going in there with the Sears and Roebuck type approach. You want to have diligence, right? You glad, Mildred? We prayed fervently for him. Good deal. You know, you got to be quiet because it's worship time. No. And so prayers made fervently for Peter. And on the very night when Herod was about to bring him forward, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains, and guard in front of the door were watching over the prison. Notice Peter was sleeping. Now, I don't know about you, if you were going to be executed in the morning, okay? Like, a lot of times you have big days, like a big trip, or if you're going overseas, or you're starting a new job or something. It's like you can't sleep. You know, take some Lunesta or drink a warm milk or something. You're trying to get to sleep. What's it like if you know you're going to die the next day? You're going to be beheaded. I mean, might that keep you up? But when you're right with God, you can sleep under any circumstances. Really, you can. When we think about it, he has a guard on each side of him. To him, he thinks he's going to die the next day, but you might as well get a good night's rest before you're beheaded, right? Because if you're going on to be with God, if that's where your destination is, and it's set, it's burned on date, you're ready to go. So he's resting up. And what's ironic is, Herod was planning on executing Peter on Sunday morning because he didn't want to do it on the Passover because the Jews might get mad. So he was more concerned about the Jews, didn't care anything about the Christians because their day was on Sunday morning. We're going to start your worship outright, church. We're going to kill one of your apostles. How do you like that? He's a cold-hearted man. It probably won't turn out well for him. We'll see. And he was surrounded by guards and chained up like Houdini. That's what the idea is they're trying to show you. And behold, an angel of the Lord suddenly appeared, and a light shone in the cell. And he struck Peter's side and woke him up, saying, "Get up quickly." And his chains fell off his hands. There are actually, you know how some of those people in the world, they just refuse to say a miracle might have occurred. And so they're always trying to explain things like Jesus was walking on the water because there's really a sheet of ice. Sometimes ice forms on the Sea of Galilee. Yeah, okay, Jesus was ice skating. Okay? But they try to say Jesus multiplied bread and fish, like he had an easy bake oven and basket or something. You know, they try to explain every single thing. A couple of these smart people, like in Princeton, said that all this occurred probably because lightning struck. Okay, because there's a big shiny light that came into the prison, knocked Peter's chains. It didn't wake anybody up, okay? Opened the jail cell and told Peter to get dressed and walk out. Come on. Let's do this. Let's go ahead and pretend that maybe something miraculous happened here. Let's keep reading. I have a feeling they're going to give us an explanation. So he says, "Get up quickly." And the chains just fell off his hands. And the angel said, "Gird yourself and put on your sandals." And he did so, and he went up to him and wrap your cloak around you and follow me. Now, I don't know if you got struck with lightning. The first thing I'm not going to do is put on my sandals. I'm going to think, what happened? If you get struck with a bolt of lightning that strong that knocks chains off, you're not going to get up and put your sandals on and be worried about covering yourself up. You're going to be a French fry. And so the word used for sandals there is kind of revealing. It's sandelion, and it was a poor man's sandals, like in Mark 6:9, usually made of wood or leather. It was the cheapy man's sandals. And the apostles didn't have much. And it was a normal thing in the day for a Jewish man to use his outer garment for a blanket. After loosening the belt and taking off his shoes, he would pull off that outer garment and he'd go ahead and use that as his blanket. Apparently, that's what's happening here. And he went out and continued to follow. And he did not know what was being done by the angel was real. But he thought he was seeing a vision. Even Peter found it hard to believe. And the angel awoke Peter, lit the way, dropped the chains, opened an iron gate, caused the guards to sleep. I think this might be a miracle. It might be angelic being helping him. Yes, that's my vote. And when he passed the first and second guard, the bolt of lightning never woke up those guards. They came to that iron gate, which leads to the city, opened them for them by itself, no keys. He just opens up. And he went out and went along one street. Immediately, the angel departed. Codex Bizet says that he went down seven steps. And so when Peter came to himself, apparently the cool night air appears to cause Peter to realize this was no dream. You ever have that where you get up in the middle of the night, you have to use the bathroom or get a drink, like ham or something, and your mouth is a little dry. You're really tired, and then you go back to bed, and you wake up, and you think, did I get up last night? You know, I remember running into a wall, and you have like a dent in your head when you wake up, you know, something like that. There's times where you wake up, and you don't know what you're really doing. Peter's having one of these moments. The big light, I mean, doors opening up. Wow, this is like a weird dream. And, you know, he gets outside in this cold, refreshing air. It's like, wow, dude, this is not a dream. This is real. Our God does a lot of things that makes us think that we're in a dream. Think about all the blessings he gives you. Think about all the times he's bailed you out. Think about all the times you've driven 1,000 miles. You parents who drive down to Hardy, think about all the mile markers that went by. Did you count everyone? Did you look at the road every single time? Think about all the times that God let you travel safely back and forth. And did he keep track of everything? Think about all the times that you almost did do something, but you didn't. And you're glad you didn't because it would have killed you. Think about those things. God is doing those things all the time. Sometimes we need a good dose of cool air to wake us up and say, you know what, I think I'm being blessed. God's always working behind the scenes. In the study we have on Tuesday afternoons, we're covering the book of Esther. In the entire book, God is not even mentioned one time. Not once. And yet, he's written all over. He's always working behind the scenes. Deliverance, whatever turmoil we have awaiting us. We just have to keep resting in God. We have to keep trusting God. When Peter comes to himself, he says, now I know for sure that the Lord hath sent forth his angel and rescued me from the hand of Herod. And all the Jewish people, and all that the Jewish people were expecting. What did they expect? They wanted a public execution. These good old boys from the Judean culture, they wanted a dead apostle. They tried James. He died. Hey, great. Let's go for another one. We'll celebrate. Yeehaw, let's kill him. That's what they wanted. They wanted Peter dead. They're not going to be happy when they find out what happened. And so, verse 12 says, and when he realized this, he went to the house of Mary, mother of John, who was also called Mark, where many were gathered together and were praying. Now, Mark is actually, in 1 Peter 5:13, one of his converts. Peter leads Mark to Christ, and Mark is the cousin of Barnabas. So if you ever get on Jeopardy and you're asked that question, that's how it lines up. 6 degrees of Peter and 7 Kevin Bacon. And so, they were gathered at John Mark's mother's home, whose name is Mary, and everybody's name was Mary back then, except Rhoda. And when he knocked at the door of the gate, a servant girl named Rhoda came to answer. And notice that they were praying. They were gathered together, and they were praying. You know, we don't do enough of that. Just just an idea. It wouldn't be an original idea by me. A lot of people have talked about it, but you know what would be really neat if we had a, instead of a 6-week Bible study for every time, maybe do 6 weeks where we get together and we're going to make a list out, and as a church, pray. Pray for all those needs. Fervently pray about them. Is it scriptural? You bet it is. Notice I look 2/3 to the left and 1/3 to the right. A chiropractor will be happy. And so this lady named Rhoda comes to the front gate. And her name means rose. A lot of women get their name from flowers. I'm glad guys don't get their name. Guys get their names from other rough things, like auto parts and hunting gear and things like that. Violet, Daisy. You know, women have those nice, fancy names. Guys don't have them. Her name means rose. She's probably a 12 or 13-year-old girl. Language seems to indicate that. She's not a servant woman, a servant girl. And she recognized Peter's voice. Because of her joy, she did not open the gate, but ran in to announce that Peter was standing at the front gate. Now picture this. It's a big prayer meeting. They have somebody watching the door. It's locked. That way, if anybody knocks. Remember, they couldn't have a big sign that says, Church Christ meets here. The church was kind of meeting underground. They had to keep things under wraps. So they're praying. And it's probably a courtyard. You have the rooms in the back, up front. So she's at that front little gate area where the lobby is, like what we would have. She hears this knock. And she hears Peter's voice, and she recognizes him. And she's so excited, she literally forgets to open the door. That's exciting. Peter's here. And they believe her, too. Because I could tell. Because they said, you're out of your mind. Think about that. Now, what does that tell you? I'm gonna put you in the first. You want to go back to the church of the first century? Here you go. They prayed fervently. But what were they praying for? I can guarantee you they were not praying for Peter's release. They weren't doing it. They're probably praying that Peter have a good last few comforting hours. Praying that, you know, Peter can draw ever so close to God. Something like that. They did not expect Peter to be delivered out of that prison. And you can tell by their reaction. You are out of your mind. That's just your first one. You're crazy. You're a crazy woman. But she kept insisting that it was so. And they kept saying, it is his angel. The Jews believed that each person had their guardian angel. That's what they believed. Now, whether they were right in that or not, we know one thing, they believed it. So they probably thought, well, his guardian angel, that's what they saw. But Peter continued knocking. Come on, guys, open the door. They're going to be looking for me. What does that tell you? That sometimes we need to be praying, but that God knows what we have need of before we ask. There are so many times that we pray for people, and God goes way beyond that. Think about, there are people in this room that were at death's door before. We have one lady right here. She had stage 4 cancer. I don't know if you know that, years ago. We talk about that in our Bible studies. She was told she had stage 4 cancer. That's as bad as you get. But she wept. People pray. And I'm sure people pray. Well, she's in front of me. Did God help her in her hour of need? And did God go past that? God always goes past. We may not always pray accurately. We may not always pray with understanding. But we pray continuously and fervently, and as a church, God will always come through. Always. What they were probably expecting was Peter died with a joyful smile on his face. He was like Paul. He was Peter. Peter died like a valiant warrior for God. Maybe something. Peter continued knocking. They had opened the door and they saw him and were amazed. And they had to let him in quickly because he could be caught. You know, they're already, you know, they don't know yet that Peter's gone, but somebody might notice something. But motioning to them with his hand, they're so excited. Speech! Just quiet. Oh, come on. He wants to explain. That happened a couple other times. Acts 13, 16, 19, 33, 21, 40, that motion in the land. Right now. And he described to them how the Lord had led him out of prison. And he said, report these things to James and the brother. Not James, the brother of John, but James, the half-brother of Jesus. See, they weren't all there. They were apparently praying fervently at different locations. Peter went to the John Mark location. Then he left and went to another place. Probably Asia Minor, 1 Peter 1, verse 1. 1 Corinthians 9:5. He had to get out of Dodge for now. He was a wanted man. Come morning, his face would be on milk cartons. He would need to leave. When day came, there was no small disturbance. Really? Yeah, they would have been in a panic. I like how he says that. It'd be no small disturbance. If it's not a small disturbance, what kind of disturbance is it? Oh my goodness, he's gone. Our job was to guard him. How did you mess this up? Now, probably only four of them were executed because they would have done shift. But think about it. Your only job is to guard somebody. You're chained up on each side and you have a guy at the door. Your job is to guard, and when your prisoner's gone and you have no explanation, you know it's not going to turn out. It's going to be really bad. And so there was no small disturbance among the soldiers as to what could have become of Peter. And when Herod searched for him and had not found him, he examined the guards. Now, this isn't like, really, how you doing? This is like a beatdown. This was like, I want to know what happened now. An interrogation. They don't have a good answer. Guards examined them. He ordered that they be led away for execution. Because you know what happened? If you were guarding somebody and they escaped from you, you automatically receive the sentence that they have. They were going to kill Peter, and now he's gone, and now they will pay the price. They'll be the ones who die. They went down from Judea to Caesarea. The he is Herod. Now, he got out of town. He went to go have some relaxing moment. Now, this is still 44 AD, the Passover being in the spring. What's about to happen occurred on around August of 44 AD. And here's what happened. It goes on to the story that this Herod was very angry with the people of Tyre and Sidon. With one accord, they came to him, having won over Blastus, the king's chamberlain. They were asking for peace because their country was fed by the king's country. What had happened is, Josephus elaborates on it, Tyre. Zion started taxing goods coming into Judea. And Herod was livid with that because there was a lot of commerce. They said, we're going to go ahead and slap casino tax. We're going to slap some kind of tax on there and skim off the top. And Herod said, I'm not paying it. You can forget it. Oh, yeah, you're going to tax me? Okay, you get 80% of all your food from us in the old grain belt. You can only eat so much fish. How's this sound? I'm going to starve you out. The ambassador, Tyre and Sidon, sent ambassadors. Blastus was the guy who kept watch over the bedchambers of Herod. They were able to bribe him and say, hey, you know, put a kind word in for us. We can't have him warring with us. We're hungry. We don't want this going on. And so he was able to be swayed. And so on an appointed day, Herod, you know, everything's going right now. He's at these games. Having put on his royal apparel, it's like a silver tissue type material that they would put on. It was extremely shiny. He took a seat on the rostrum and began delivering an address to them. Josephus says that this was on the second day of the games, honoring Claudius Caesar's safe return back from Britain. So it's on August 2nd, 44 AD. And the people kept crying out, this is the voice of God and not a man. That's what they do for Caesar. They start exalting him as God, and it started a big round of cheers for Caesar. Now it's Herod. He's letting this power go to his head. People kept crying out. And immediately an angel of the Lord struck him because he did not give glory to God. He was eaten of worms and died. Josephus said that he died 5 days later after a collapse. He was 54 years of age. Apparently had some kind of intestinal worms that just killed him. He collapsed here and died shortly thereafter. But here's what the whole passage is about. Think about this. Think about everything I just said. We as a church have faced nothing this church has faced. But the word of the Lord continued to grow and to be multiplied. Despite what goes on in the world, the church can still grow. There's a lot going on. Think about that. If there's any one of 10 different stories that make the top of the news, it's amazing. It's I'm a newsaholic. I watch news all the time. I can tell you about all the reporters, what's going on. If you ever need to know something going on in the world, ask me. I can tell you that day. Because I watch Fox and CNN. And I watch the O'Reilly Family. So I know it all. But there's so much going on in the world that it's scary. You have Islam. You could have something going on in the Middle East and your gas goes to $10 a gallon. You know, down in Harding University this week, pro-homosexual, God-hating website was put up. Harding blocked it and received national news because they said they were against homosexuals. It's ridiculous. They're against fornication. Read the fine print. But think about that. The attacks that Christians have. And I can guarantee you, in a short time, they're going to try to take funding away from these private institutions that receive money. That's what their goal is. Try and war against the church, war against God's people. You know, go out on the street. You know, it used to be, I know somebody who had recently got a job, and, you know, they were afraid to say anything that they were a Christian for fear that they'd be retaliated before they got the job. That you got to be secret about being a Christian. Used to be, just even 10 years ago, I'm a Christian. People would want to hire you because that might possibly mean that you're honest and hardworking and you don't serve them with eye service, but you serve God who sees you. All the benefits rolled into one. But now it's like you're a social pariah. Think about all that the church is going through and going to be going through, and the threats and the injustice that will be done against you as being a Christian. You need to understand and remember, but the word of the Lord continued to grow and be multiplied. Satan's never going to stop the church unless he let him. It doesn't matter who's at the top of the realm. God will eat him with worms. Doesn't matter what the populace of the people say, God will take care of that. God will get you out of your prison. God will make sure that that word continues to spread. And symbolic of that is verse 25. Barnabas and Saul returned from Jerusalem. And when they had fulfilled their mission, underline that, fulfilled their mission, taken along with them John, who was also called Mark. What was their mission? To take aid to Jerusalem concerning the famine of 1129. Whenever there's a mission, there must be a set of objectives that can be fulfilled. You have to understand, our mission is to preach Christ in Jerusalem. And don't beg. Don't be ashamed of the gospel. For it's the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes. There are people out there, don't give up. Look back. Press on toward the mark of the prize and the call of God in Christ Jesus. Keep pressing on. Keep looking forward. Hold to your values. I was so proud of the president of Harding for what he said. How he stood up against it. He said, we're not for anything. We need to make sure that we always hold to what the mission is. And the mission is to glorify God. Whatever you eat, whatever you drink, whatever you do, do all to the glory. That's our mission. And Satan can never stop you. Ever. He can't. Just hold to your guns. Watch what happens. He'll try to lock you down. He'll try to execute you. You just keep resting in Jesus. You're stuck between two prison guards. That's okay. Because you'll fly away. If you want to respond to the invitation, what's holding you back? Why haven't you become Christian? Put it off of you. Respond. Come forward. Say, I want to put on Christ in baptism. I want to invest in this. I want to be counted in the new way. I want salvation. Do you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God? And are you willing to live for Him the rest of your life? If you are, here's your shot. Do it today. Drink the water. Some for you to change it to be immersed into the water, trusting that Jesus Christ will save you, be brought up, leaving your old self behind, and you're walking.